Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
The libs have attacked lots of normal things in recent years. Among them, in no particular order, the definition of marriage, the American flag, separate bathrooms for boys and girls, monogamy, statues of national heroes, and plastic straws, among many others. Well, it's time to add at least one more normal thing to the list of things the libs hate, and it is perhaps the most normal thing of all. Birds do it, bees do it, even sentimental trees do it. That is, drumroll please, reproducing, having kids. Establishment journal Politico now has a report on the far right's campaign to explode the population. Fertility is now right wing. Fecundity is fascism. Until now, if you didn't want your family and country to die, literally to die, you would be most accurately described as normal, which today, of course, makes you a far-right extremist. I'm Michael Knowles. This is The Michael Knowles Show. Welcome back to the show. Joe Biden has moved ahead with banning TikTok, and some conservatives are celebrating, I think, they are misunderstanding the situation. I think this is a big win for Biden if this goes through. We'll get to why in a moment. First, though, here at the Daily Wire, we are big fans of entertainment content that is not trying to push a woke agenda into your living room. That is why you've got to go check out The Ballad of Davy Crockett, a pro-America, pro-family, pro-God, PG-13 action adventure that fathers and sons can watch together. An historical fiction from the imagination of writer and director Derek Estlin Purvis, the film explores some of the many myths that helped to create the legend of Davy Crockett. The story begins in 1815, when Crockett's wife falls deathly ill, leaving his young children to survive on their own. The American legend must fight his way back to them across the many perils found in the savage lands of the wild frontier. This film examines the complex 200-year history of European settlers and Native Americans living side by side as neighbors, long before Andrew Jackson's Indian Removal Act. It stands in direct opposition to the genocidal colonization story that Hollywood loves to tell, instead exposing the truth that these two groups traded with each other, intermarried, and yes, sometimes fought as humans do. The Ballad of Davy Crockett is in select theaters and available to buy or rent everywhere you buy movies. If you want to support films that are decent, family-friendly, and push back against Hollywood's anti-America agenda, please support this small independent film. Click the link in the description and go check out The Ballad of Davy Crockett. This is about as close to the heart of the left's agenda as I can imagine. The attack on having children. This is a bad... Sometimes the libs, they play around the edges and they try to degrade or damage the culture in this way or in that way. Or they suggest that people, I don't know, you know, postpone marriage, or they use, I don't know, they give up their cultural patrimony, or they denigrate their forebears, or they... But this is what it really comes down to. They're saying, hey, don't have another generation. Kill your culture. Kill your family, and then kill all your families, and then there won't be any culture anymore, because there won't be any more people to carry on that culture. And then when we suggest, hey, maybe people ought to have kids, maybe that's like a normal good thing, they say that this is a far-right campaign to explode the population. So just a few little corrections here. Explode the population. The population has been dying since 1971 in the United States, and really more broadly through the West. we have had a dying population since 1971. We are not replacing ourselves. So when conservatives suggest, hey, maybe we ought to have at least 2.1 children each, and maybe even three, or who knows, maybe even four. Wouldn't that be so crazy? We're not suggesting that we explode the population. We're suggesting that we try not to die. That's it. I guess that if I were the editor of this piece, I would correct that and say the far right's campaign to try not to have an imminent social death, complete collapse, and extinction. Next part. Though relatively small as conferences go, NatalCon has attracted attendees who are almost intensely dedicated to the cause of raising the U.S. birth rate. The broader natalist movement has been gaining momentum lately in conservative circles. The natalist movement used to be called being normal and being attracted to the opposite sex and getting married and having children. That's now, this is really kind of an amazing movement. I think I'm also, in addition to the natalist movement, I'm going to launch the air breathing movement and the water drinking movement. Just these crazy movements, you know, where we just do things that every single person on earth did naturally until we all lost our minds and perverted all of our desires about 5 minutes ago. It's gaining movement lately, getting momentum rather lately in conservative circles where anxieties over falling birth rates have converged with fears of rising immigration. Hold on. That's not an accident that those things converge. The explicit argument that the mass migration advocates make for mass migration is that we don't have enough Americans to sustain our economy. So there are, again, this is not an implicit argument. We're not reading the tea leaves here. The overt logic that the pro-mass migration people are using to justify their policy, which the vast majority of Americans don't like, is that if we do not have mass migration, because we don't have kids anymore, our economy will collapse. So if you want to fix mass migration, even according to the mass migration advocates, you've got to start having more kids. That's not some crazy right-wing conspiracy theory. We are just repeating what the libs have been telling us for decades. This movement counts Elon Musk, who has nearly a dozen children, and Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban among its proponents. So in Hungary is pretty much the only country in the West that has in any way turned its birth rate collapse around, and it's still not above replacement, but it's ticked up a little bit since Hungary instituted the family policy, which says if you have more than three kids, you don't pay taxes. It's a great policy, and I think we should have it here in the United States too. That's what makes Viktor Orban a proponent of the pronatalist movement. Okay, he's also the only prime minister in the West who has done anything to improve the birth rate problem. So maybe he's not a kooky fringe figure. Maybe we ought to emulate him. Natalism, however, here's the rub. Natalism is often about more than raising birth rates, though that is certainly one of its aims. For many in the room, the ultimate goal is a total social overhaul, a culture in which child rearing is paramount. Yeah. If you promote a thing, usually that it follows that you want the culture to be more supportive of that thing. As though here's the nefarious underbelly of the having kids movement. It's not really just about having kids. It's also about having a culture where people have more kids. Uh-huh. Right. That is... That follows. This conference might look like something new, a case for having kids that is rooted in a critique of the market-driven forces that shape our lives and the shifts that have made our culture less family-oriented. So it's not just the typical old conservatives, you know, stodgy people saying, hey, you know, God tells us be fruitful and multiply, so you got to do that. Let's go have more kids. There's also something that looks a little bit new going on here. It's a critique of capitalism. And that part is true. It's not a left-wing conference, obviously. It's a conservative conference, but there are plenty of conservative and right-wing critiques of capitalism. Let's not forget, modern market capitalism is a product of liberalism, right? Comes about after the Enlightenment, then you after that, after you have a widespread adoption of a more liberal economics in the wake of Adam Smith and the Wealth of Nations. Then you get industrialization. Now, if you listen to Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum, we're in the fourth industrial revolution. So the first one is mechanization. The second one is the production line and electrification. The third one is computing and the internet. The fourth one now, we're all going to like plug our brain stems into the matrix and have an internet in everything. There's probably going to be an internet in my leftist ears Tumblr soon. That creates problems. And it's not just critiques from the left, the Marxists and the socialists who are critiquing capitalism, but it's conservatives too. It's just a major disruption. And of course, conservatives are going to have some questions about this and maybe raise some objections because I don't know if you ever attended a Republican Party function in the 90s or 2000s or even the 20-teens, but you would hear two things. In every Republican Party speech, you'd hear two things. You'd hear about how we need to defend traditional family values and our great American way of life and conserve our culture. And then in the very next breath, you would hear these Republicans say, and that's why we need massive creative destruction and no guardrails whatsoever and huge innovation that's going to upend everything and make us all a lot more money and tick up GDP. And you think, well, I like material prosperity as much as the next guy, and I don't want to be left behind and beaten by China or another geopolitical adversary. But don't you see, conserve our culture, protect our social order, massive creative destruction, don't have guardrails for anything. Those two goals are in conflict. And there are problems with the modern market economy, in part because it doesn't even operate so much like a market. It's this kind of weird managerial hodgepodge of some of the worst aspects of left-wing and right-wing economics. That's one problem with it. You started to see the birth rate problem begin really long before 1971. It really does begin with industrialization. So I even think of the poem by William Blake, Jerusalem, you know, and did these feet in ancient time walk upon England's mountains green, pastures green. I'm getting some of the words wrong, but there's a famous line in it, which is, and was Jerusalem builded here among these dark satanic mills? The dark satanic mills are referring to the mills of industrialization. That's a deeply conservative critique. And it does, because as everyone's going into the factories, there's just less opportunity and less impetus for people to have really big families. And that's a problem. It's a problem because even if you don't like kids, even if you don't want to have kids, if no one has kids anymore and we have a below replacement birth rate, our civilization's just going to die. And we're going to slow down the death a little bit by importing migrants in huge numbers from all around the world that are going to cause all sorts of social unrest and are going to, especially if they don't assimilate, which no one does anymore, they're going to crack up the cultural cohesion that we have. So it's even if you don't want kids, it creates a major, major problem. And then finally we hear, this conference suggests there's a simple way around the problem of majority rule, breeding a new majority, one that looks and sounds just like them. Okay, that's kind of a funny joke. I remember in my early days in working on political campaigns, Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels had one of these funny lines. He said, listen, kids, I'd recommend to you that we beat the libs at the ballot box, but also get married and have a lot of kids. We can either out-argue the liberals or we can outbreed the liberals. The latter is much more fun. And it's a funny line. I use the line too sometimes. But it's about more than that. It's not just about the liberals not having kids and the conservatives having kids, and then boom, there you go. First of all, sometimes kids rebel against their parents. And the way that kids rebel against their parents is because culture matters. The society in which we live is going to shape how we think about things, how we view the world, and how we view ourselves. So part of creating a culture of life and a culture not only that is opposed to abortion, but a culture that is encouraging of marriage and family and having lots of kids and being normal. Part of that that's so important is it changes the very attitudes. It changes the way we think of human beings and society. Governor Kristi Noem, you know, is in a lot of hot water because she killed her farm dog. And some people feel very strongly about this. Of course, people love their dogs and their puppies. So they're going to have an emotional reaction to that. And I totally get it. And it's just, that's always the way things are. Dog is man's best friend. What's bizarre about that, though, right now, is that we're living in a time in which politicians will, you know, rend their garments and clutch their pearls over a woman putting down a farm dog, but they will brag about how they've killed their own babies through abortion. they will gleefully support abortion up until the third and frankly fourth trimester, if we're talking about the Virginia governor, Ralph Northam, and some other Democrats as well. What's really weird about people shedding all these tears over Kristi Noem's poor pooch is not that they love their dogs. It's that we live in a society that mistakes dogs for children, that walks dogs around in little strollers. Not joking. I know people who have done it. Even Pope Francis, the Holy Father, is considered kind of a liberal pope. He has said this is really anti-human. I see bumper stickers on cards, proud dog mom, proud dog grandmother. This is very sad because dogs are nice and everything, but they're dogs. They're not people. And as we come to worship nature, we denigrate civilization. As we come to worship animals and other creatures that don't have a rational soul, we it seems, make an idol out of them, and we denigrate our own humanity. The pronatal movement, it's called being normal, folks. We could use a lot more of it. There's so much more to say. First, though, text Knowles to 989898. The cost of living has already increased 17% this year and continues to rise despite interest rate controls. As our national debt continues to skyrocket, you need to be confident in the financial services companies you work with, especially regarding your money and future. Birch Gold is a proven industry leader you want on your side. They demonstrate how precious metal investments can fortify your lifestyle and retirement, even in turbulent economic times. Birch Gold understands that navigating financial decisions can be daunting. That is why their expertise, coupled with their customer care process, ensures that your purchase or IRA setup is a breeze. If you're considering converting an existing retirement account into a precious metals IRA, their dedicated in-house IRA department is there to guide you every step of the way, making the process feel as simple as a walk in the park. Birch Gold values your questions and concerns. Their team is always available to provide answers and clarity. Whether it's about fees, taxes on rollovers, or the timing of the process, they are here to ensure you feel heard and informed. Text Knowles, KNOWLES, to 989898 to talk to one of Birch Gold's experts and claim your free info kit on gold. You will learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold. The best part is it does not cost you a penny out of pocket. Just text Knowles, KNOWLES, to 989898. That is Knowles to 989898. Speaking of the future, big announcement. It's an announcement of an announcement. Headline, the announcement that we've found alien life could be just a couple years away. Spoiler alert. No, it won't. It won't be. It won't be because we won't find it. It's not there. It's something that the libs are really, really obsessed with, but it's not there. According to one of these scientists, here's the argument for why we could just be a few years away from the announcement that we've found life elsewhere in the universe. If life is everywhere, it can be in that system, the system that we've just identified. It may be that we need to observe 100 systems before we find life, or 1,000. But it could also be that we just need to observe one system. If that's the case, then the announcement that we're not alone could be just a couple of years from now. Okay. The problem with her argument is that first premise. If life is everywhere, why do you think that life is everywhere? Well, you know, it's just probability. Okay, why do you think it's probability? Well, because life arose here on Earth, so why wouldn't it arise elsewhere in the universe? It's a big old universe, isn't it? Why wouldn't it arise elsewhere? That's just probability. Okay, well, in order to ascertain the probability of something, you need to know anything about how that thing came to be. And implicit in all of these arguments is that life just arose kind of randomly. It's just a natural thing that happened, and it's a thing that happened. And we certainly have no idea how it happened. There was an old thesis that there was a kind of primordial hot soup of molecules and elements banging around, and then at some point they just banged around enough that, you know, the super molecule got up and started dancing around. But there's no evidence that that's true. It's just fantasy and fiction, scientific fiction to fill in gaps that they have no idea how to fill in based on any kind of evidence. So we have no idea, as a scientific matter of physical empirical observation, we have no idea how life began. Now, I have a pretty good idea of how life began. I think that in the beginning was the Word, the Logos, the divine logic of the universe, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, right? And I think that God made this, like the sky, you know, and the water, and the birds of the air and the fish of the sea. And then he formed man out of clay, and then he breathed into man, and then there was man, you know? And then, but it's not good for man to be alone, because man's a social creature and a coupling creature. So God like ripped out one of man's ribs and then made a woman for him. And there are going to be a lot of people listening to this who say, oh, here we go. Here we go. Here's some crazy religious explanation. I'm just saying that explanation, which modern scientific secular people scoff at, is much more persuasive, and there is much more evidence for it than any other explanation we've ever heard for the origin of life. The best alternative explanation they've got is the primordial soup of random molecules bumping into each other until they form a turtle or something. And there's not even an explanation as to how that happened. So you might be unsatisfied with this beautiful, evocative, allegorical, I suppose, you know, explanation of how life begins. And you might find it an obstacle to say, well, I want to know the literal explanation. But don't forget, there's no such thing as a merely literal thing, because literal refers to letters, and letters are signs and symbols. I'm not trying to be cute about this. I'm saying there is nothing that is merely physical in the world. There's nothing that is without meaning. We are in a, because the world is intelligible, and because we have intellect that can perceive the intelligibility of the world, because we can communicate, because you can understand the words that I'm saying right now, which are just symbols that are coming out of my mouth. They're symbols of symbols, actually, because I'm creating a sound based on a word which is in my head, and you can understand what that means. We are acknowledging that there is meaning in the world. And so we hear an allegorical description of how the world begins, and we get hung up on whether it's literal or not. I don't even know what literal is. But you know what I do know? You know what I'm pretty confident in? That we will not find out that E.T. is living on planet Zebulon 7 in just a few years. I think the libs are going to keep waiting for this, because it's part of the liberal mythology, and they're the same as the kind of cultists who are always waiting for the end of the world, and it's going to happen on this specific date in 6 months, then it doesn't happen and they wait for the next one. The other crazy thing about it is I can't help but notice that the libs are really interested in all other life, all life everywhere potentially in the cosmos except for human life. We're interested, if we found one little tiny bacterium on planet Zebulon 7, it would be the biggest banner news. They would just go crazy. But if a mother becomes pregnant with a beautiful human child, we would deny that that was life, and we would encourage that in our liberal culture, we'd encourage that mother to kill that baby. If we find a little delta smelt hiding out in a little pond somewhere, you know that the government is going to send in the Marines to stop a developer from building a building on that property, because we have to protect the sweet little delta smelt. The life is so precious. There's going to be some special type of berry that grows there, and we're going to have to shut down all development. But a human being, that's the one animal that we don't care about at all, that we're trying to diminish, that we mock people for wanting to produce more of them. We say they're crazy pro-natalist far-right maniacs. We push contraception in the culture. We push abortion in the culture. We push euthanasia. We're killing old people in any way to prevent there from being more humans. Humans who are the highest of the created things in this cosmos of ours. We have rational souls. We can talk about these things. We can reason abstractly. That's why we're tried for crimes, is because we have a conception of justice. The little delta smelt can't do that. And yet, oddly enough, the one animal we don't want any more of, at least as far as the liberals are concerned, is human beings.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Now, ladies and gents, you know what I want more of? Judged by Matt Walsh. A new episode premieres tonight, 8 Eastern on Daily Wire Plus. Judge Matt Walsh is not merely playing a part. He's defining it. What does that mean? I don't even know what that means. Clad in a robe that commands the room and wielding a gavel that lays down the law, Matt Walsh brings his trademark wit and ironclad logic to the pettiest of squabbles, proving that no dispute is too trivial for a dose of common sense. Remember, the courtroom is Judge Walsh's domain, but entry is exclusive to Daily Wire Plus members. So make the wise decision. Get your membership now at dailywireplus.com and witness the gavel of justice in action tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern with an all-new episode of Judged by Matt Walsh, only on Daily Wire Plus. Speaking of a dearth of intelligent life, cops, happily, are clearing the weirdo protesters off of our campuses and out of our parks. Here is one clip of a rather surprised protester who never thought that the cops would actually do their job.
You're hurting me!
A little toddler. You're hurting me! Stop it, just dropping it. This is when I say, like, hey, buddy. This is my little toddler. Hey, buddy, it's time to go to bed. I don't want to go to bed. It's time to go to bed. Buddy drops to the ground. I said, well, I'll just pick you up. Huh? What? You can pick me up? And by the way, my toddler screams and cries a lot less than that college student. Little darker in some places. Not only are these pro-Palestine liberation protesters camping out on the sidewalk and the street and the quads, they're also donning keffiyehs and prohibiting Jewish students from entering campus.
You guys have closed the entrance. We are UCLA students. I have my ID right here. I'm being blocked off, not by the security guard, but by you two. You three. Oh, look, they're making their burger while I'm going this way. Excuse me. This is what they do. Everybody, look at this. Look at this. I'm a UCLA student. I deserve to go here. We pay tuition. This is our school. And they're not letting me walk in. My class is over there. I want to use that entrance. Why can't I go? Will you let me go in? This can be over in a second. Just let me and my friends go in to class.
We're not engaging with that.
Then you can move. Will you move?
We're not engaging with that.
Okay, we're going. We're going. I'm going in. I have my hands up. I'm not hurting them.
They don't really garner a lot of sympathy, do they? The keffiyehs around their face looking like jihadis doesn't really make me want to support these people as they're blocking a Jewish student from getting on campus. Now, we're viewing these protests as though this were about Israel, Palestine, the Gaza war. We're viewing these protests as though it were about Muslims versus Jews or something. And I guess there's an aspect of that. But I've been around a lot of college campuses for a long time. And these are the very same people. They are the same people who block the entrance of conservatives who want to go to a lecture, often lectures that I'm giving on campus. It's the same ones who are just standing there quietly, masks on, not moving. It's all the same tactics. It's all the same people. I remember back when I was in college, there was an Occupy Wall Street style protest on campus. And a bunch of these vagrants and indigents and drug addicts and bums and anarchists decided to pitch a bunch of gross tents on the green, the big green outside of campus. And they turned it into a tent city. A poor woman got raped there because it was a bunch of these ne'er-do-wells and criminals, and the cops didn't have the political backing and the politicians didn't have the courage to go arrest them as they ought to be arrested. And I remember at the time of the Occupy protests, Rudy Giuliani had a beautiful quote about the whole thing. He said, I had a rule as mayor of New York. I had a rule and I enforced it as best I could and pretty effectively. The rule was, you're not allowed to sleep on the streets. Sleeping on the streets is a dysfunctional act. It harms the person. It harms society. It leads to unsanitary conditions that affect public health. That's my thought on it. You want to know my thought on these protests? My thought on these protests has basically nothing to do with the state of Israel or the status of the Palestinian Arabs in Gaza or the West Bank or the expression of the American youth protest culture, or it has nothing to do with any of that. My position on this stuff is that sleeping on the street is a dysfunctional act that harms the individual and society. Going around screaming all sorts of obscenities, wearing keffiyehs, it's dysfunctional. It's not civilized. It's not in keeping with the American tradition, the American free speech tradition, the American tradition of just how we comport ourselves in what's supposed to be a normal, good country. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. I'm sick of it. J.D. Vance, a very wise senator, who actually was at my college, he was in the law school, I was in the undergrad, when those Occupy protests were going on. So he saw the same thing I did firsthand. Maybe it radicalized him like it did to me. He had a similar and correct take on the whole situation, which we will get to in 1 second. First, though, you got to subscribe to the Michael Knowles YouTube channel. Smash the subscribe button. Ring, ding, ding-a-ling it. Hit that bell. And that way you will get all of the latest videos. You got the kid at UCLA is not allowed to get on campus. You got student demonstrators at Columbia. They've been shutting down Morningside Heights for well over a week now. And the university keeps saying, all right, this is it. This is the ultimatum. You protesters have to go away. And then what? They don't go away. And then the university caves. Now Jewish students aren't even showing up to class because they fear for their safety. Fair enough. You got wackos with keffiyehs screaming about river to the sea. We're going to get rid of all the Jews or whatever. And so I get why they're not going to class. And the university is just so pathetic. They're so cowardly. So J.D. Vance, Senator Vance from Ohio, comes out and he says, my view on the campus protests is very simple. I don't care what your cause is, whether you're pro or anti-Israel or anything else. You don't get to turn our public places into a garbage dump. No civilization should tolerate these encampments. Get rid of them. I agree. I would go a little further than Senator Vance. I do care what your cause is. I favor a broad array of topics that we can debate in keeping with the American tradition. But to quote William F. Buckley Jr. back in the good old days, based Buckley, when he described himself as an epistemological optimist, I do think there are certain things that we can exclude. For instance, If one were to go out and burn the American flag, I favor the traditional jurisprudence on this question before recent decades when the Supreme Court said there is some First Amendment right to burn the flag. For the vast majority of American history, no such right was ever recognized, and there were plenty of statutes against flag burning because it's a totally incoherent act. It's to use a word from G.K. Chesterton, it's like the thought that stops thought, which is the only thought that ought to be stopped, because one would be invoking one's bedrock American rights to burn the symbol of the country. And we treat, because we live in a world that's very symbolic and we recognize that signs and symbols really matter, as we've been talking about all show today, the flag is a symbol of the whole country. That's why when the flag drops on the ground, if you're raised right, you're going to go pick that flag up. You're not going to let the flag touch the ground. You're not going to let the flag become dirty. You're not going to leave the flag out in a rainstorm. Why not? It's just a piece of fabric, right? No one really, it's just, who cares? Because of what the flag symbolizes. And so it is an incoherent act. That's why there were special laws and regulations about what we could do with the flag before we blew this up because the conservatives, stupidly, I think, adopted the left's disingenuous embrace of free speech. The libs are going to accuse conservatives of hypocrisy on free speech when conservatives come out and say, we need to stop these protesters. And they're going to say the only reason why conservatives are moving to stop these protests now is because conservatives fanatically support the state of Israel. And it's true. There is a disproportionate and extreme support for the state of Israel on the American right, much more so than on the American left, which is now dominated by its Hamas faction. That's true. And they'll say, where were these conservatives when the BLM protests were happening? Why weren't they shutting down those protests? I happily would have, and I advocated for that at the time. Many conservatives did. Then there were the squish conservatives like Mitt Romney who were, you know, marching in the streets with those people. But there are going to be some conservatives who have articulated the principle that we need just to be able to say whatever you want, whenever you want to say it. That's American free speech. And those people are going to be hypocrites when it comes to these protests. But that ain't me, baby. That has not been my position. In fact, I wrote a whole book called Speechless, Controlling Words, Controlling Minds, about how that is, thank you, that is not what free speech has traditionally meant in America. It's not conservative. It's not particularly good. We always need limits. All societies are defined by taboos and standards and norms. And so I hate to see the chaos and disorder in our country and the injustice that these kinds of demonstrations are leading to. But I have to tell you, I feel a little bit vindicated because when I wrote my book, whenever it was, four years ago now, my view was a fringe view on the right. At that time, all these conservatives were presenting themselves as free speech absolutists. And I said, guys, that's not historical. That's totally crazy. It's not philosophically coherent. It's not conservative. Like, you guys are taking a short-term win here, but it's going to come back to bite you. And it is coming back to bite them now. But now, I'm happy to say conservatives are coming back around to realizing, hey, we live in a society. We're allowed to have standards and norms. And as JD, I think ahead of the curve for a lot of Republican politicians, says, you don't get to turn our public places into a garbage dump. No civilization should tolerate this. Totally agree. And I'm glad many other people are agreeing with us now too. Now, speaking of protests, did you know that Joe Biden was arrested at a civil rights protest? Allegedly?
And I looked at my mom, I said, honey, you haven't said anything. She said, Joey, let me remember, true story. She said, remember when they were desegregating Linfield, the neighborhood, and it was, 70 homes built at one suburbia? And I told you, and there was a black family moving in, and there was people were down there protesting. I told you not to go down there, and you went down. Remember that? And you came, got arrested, be standing on the porch with a black family.
Right.
And they brought you back, the police. And I said, yeah, Mom, I remember that.
Yeah, Mom, I remember that. Joey, do you remember when you were the greatest hero of the 1960s and 70s? Do you remember when Martin Luther King walked up to you and he said, Joe, I have a dream that one day you'll be the president because you're the greatest, coolest, most handsome guy ever, Joe. And all black people should vote for you. And you know what, Joe? If black people don't vote for you, they ain't black. You remember, Joey, when Dr. King said that to you? I do remember that, Mom. Well, I don't remember that. And not even the liberal journalists remember that. CNN, of all places, coming out, fact-checking this claim. Fact check, Biden repeats his claim that he got arrested defending civil rights. There is still no evidence for it. There is no evidence for that, just as there's no evidence that Joe Biden ever got his license to drive a Mack truck, just as there's no evidence of a lot of things that Joe Biden says. The real irony, the hilarious irony to Joe Biden now presenting himself as, you know, the deputy to Martin Luther King, if not soon it's going to be Malcolm X, that he, the Joe Biden, this great civil rights icon, is that Joe Biden began his political career as, shall we say, a skeptic of some of the civil rights movement. Joe Biden's own vice president, Kamala Harris, made this her chief attack when she was running for president against Joe Biden in 2020. She said there was this policy of busing, where you would bus black kids all the way across town or across the county to the rich white schools. And no one really liked this policy. Especially not the rich white liberals who had their schools being taken over by the poor black kids from the inner city. And all those rich white liberals really could talk a good game on civil rights until it affected them. And then they hated the policy. But even a lot of black people who were being bused didn't like the policy. It was generally unpopular. It was a big hobby horse of the left, though. Biden opposed it. Biden famously opposed it. And his own vice president said, one of those girls who was getting bussed was a young Kamala Harris, Joe. And you dirty, rotten racist, you oppose that. Joe Biden famously said, unless we do something about this, talking about busing, my children are going to grow up in a jungle. The jungle being a racial jungle with tensions having built so high that it is going to explode at some point. We've got to make some move on this. Meaning we got to stop the busing. That is an actual quote from Joe Biden from September 27th, 1977, it is in the records of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He said that unless we do something about all this civil rights stuff, my kids are going to grow up in a racial jungle. Okay. And now all of a sudden, he's best buddies with I don't know, MLK and Nelson Mandela and Malcolm X. I don't know. So sad. It's especially sad for Biden because it means he's never stood for anything. He was for the crime bill before he was against the crime bill. He was against busing before he was for busing. He was for the defense of marriage before he was for the abolition of marriage. He was this, that. He doesn't believe anything. So, which means he has no legacy. His legacy will be that maybe he'll get a post office named after him. I guess he'll get a presidential library. But he has no legacy because despite rising to the highest office in the land, he's never accomplished anything because he doesn't believe anything, so he never had anything to accomplish. So it's a real warning for everyone out there who is compromising on their beliefs and their integrity just in the pursuit of power or prestige or a new position. You can get the power and you get the prestige in the new position, but if you don't wield it for any purpose, it is as though you never had it. It's totally pointless, as has been Joe Biden's political career.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
My favorite comment yesterday is from Mr. Drew One, who says, Kristi Noem might not get picked for VP, but after that dog story, she's the obvious choice to run the ATF. That's true. Maybe dog catcher. Maybe dog catcher. I don't know. Do we have a federal dog catcher? I don't know. Speaking of Joe Biden's presidency, Bill Barr just gave a masterclass for critics of President Trump, for everyone really, on how to handle the 2024 presidential race. I'm going to have to sing his praises even more. Bill Barr just gave a masterclass for American citizens on how to view politics, full stop.
Response to you saying you'd vote for the Republican ticket. Wow, former AG Bill Barr, who let a lot of great people down by not investigating voter fraud in our country, has just endorsed me for president, despite the fact that I called him weak, slow-moving, lethargic, gutless, and lazy. Based on the fact that I greatly appreciate his wholehearted endorsement, I am removing the word lethargic from my statement. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah. It's classic Trump. What's the question?
What's your response?
My response, well, I mean, obviously, what I said was that I'm very disappointed that this country is stuck with this choice between two people who I don't think either of them should be president of the United States. But given that binary choice, I feel I have to choose Trump.
But he's mocking you.
So it's not about me.
I love that. I love that last line. Caitlin Collins, CNN, she thinks she's got Bill. She's going to embarrass him because Bill Barr, Trump's attorney general, comes out and he'd been very critical of Trump, but he says, well, yeah, I endorse him. It's between him and Biden, so I endorse him. And Trump, you know, twists the knife. He's making fun of Barr, even as he's thanking him for the endorsement. And Bill Barr laughs it off. He says, yeah, of course, it's Trump. What do you expect of Trump? He says, but he's mocking you. He's making fun of you. Aren't you going to endorse Biden now? And he goes, huh? Oh, no. It's not about me. It's not about me. There are a lot of people, and I get it. I sympathize. People who have personal beef with Donald Trump, who now say, I can't vote for Donald Trump because I have personal beef. I get it. I sympathize. But that is not the magnanimous thing. That is not what someone great of soul would think of in this situation, because it's a binary choice, as Bill Barr says. And you might not like Trump. You might lament that this is the binary choice that we have, but it is the choice that we have. Same thing happened in 2016, and there was a Never Trump movement, and I thought it was, that was wrong. And I was obviously not a part of the Never Trump movement. Even though at that time, I didn't realize how great a president Trump would be. So I had trepidations. I thought, I don't know, he's a New York billionaire. He's palled around with Democrats. I don't know if he's going to be a good president. But I said, but it's a binary choice. And so whatever your trepidations, even if you got personal beef like Bill Barr, he says, it's not about that. It's not about me. It's about the country. He goes on.
I think that I've said this all along. If faced with a choice between two people, neither of which I think should be president, I feel it's my duty to pick the person who I think would do the least damage to the country. And I think Trump would do less damage than Biden. And I think all this stuff about a threat to democracy, I think the real threat to democracy is the progressive movement and the Biden administration.
Perfect. I want every Republican who says, I'm not going to vote for Trump, whether because, I don't know, because you liked Haley or DeSantis or whoever. And now I'm not going to vote for Trump. Okay. Well, look, if you're a liberal, if you're just a liberal, like Liz Cheney or something, okay, you're a liberal, you vote for Biden, you like liberalism. But if you're not, if you say you're a conservative, if you really believe what Bill Barr just said, that the real threat comes from the progressive movement, it comes from the left, it comes from the liberals, that's the real threat to our democracy, our form of government, our constitution, all the rest of it, then you got to vote for Trump. You got to vote for Trump, or you're a narcissist. Or, ironically, you are the thing you accuse Trump of being. Or you're self-interested and you're not thinking of the common good and you're not thinking of it. Or I know it's hard for a lot of people. Trump just is this stumbling block for a lot of people. I like him. Maybe it's because I'm a New Yorker and I just get some of his quirks a little bit more and I get more of a kick out of it. But I know some people find the man odious. And for all these reasons, they accuse him of being a narcissist. They accuse him of all that stuff. But if you allow your petty objections to him to impel you to advance the progressive movement that you supposedly, in principle, oppose, you are guilty of the things you're accusing him of. Far more obviously guilty than he would be. Bill Barr gets it, man. Bill, he's a very smart guy. It's not about Bill Barr. It's not even about Donald Trump. He's the figure. He's the character. He's the protagonist of the narrative. But it's about the country. That's what the elections are about. And that's how this guy managed to win the presidency in the first place. And most people, in some way, are on his side. Even if they don't like him personally, they recognize this guy's being railroaded and it's about a lot more than him. 4 criminal indictments. First time we've ever done that to a former president. It's over totally bogus nonsense to the current leader of the Republican Party.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
What percentage of voters do you think believe he's going to get a fair trial? This is a CNN, speaking of CNN, this is a CNN poll. Most voters doubt that he's going to get a fair trial in New York. Only 44% have confidence that Trump will be judged by a jury that can reach a, quote, fair verdict. 56% were skeptical that a fair outcome is in the cards. Only 13% said that Trump is being treated the same as other criminal defendants. And what's interesting is 34% say he's being treated too harshly. Another 34% say he's being treated too leniently. So almost it is exactly split. 19% said they had not heard enough to say. 0% had no opinion. And that's the key number here. Of course, this is one of the main reasons why we have not previously prosecuted former presidents, even when they deserved it. This is why we have not previously prosecuted leaders of the opposition, even when they deserved it. Because no former president, no current leader of the opposition can possibly have an impartial jury, can possibly have a fair trial. Everyone has an opinion on them. It's their job to make sure that everybody has an opinion on them. and that is reflected in the polls. And it is why the criminal prosecution of a former president, leader of the opposition, poses a unique threat to democracy. How ironic. The rest of the show continues now. You do not want to miss it. Become a member. Use code Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S, at checkout for 2 months free on all annual plans.